One morning in August of 1875, the poet and abolitionist and Unitarian Julia Ward Howe wrote a few sentences in her journal. "There is no hell like that of a selfish heart, and there is no misfortune so great as that of not being able to make a sacrifice." These two thoughts come to me strongly this morning. It is something to have learned these truths so we can never again doubt them. Don't be selfish seems like it should be an easy enough message to preach, but what Julia Ward Howe just said there seems a little stronger than that. I mean, I guess it's basic sense that we should be thinking of others rather than ourselves, or at least rather than only of ourselves. As it is Mother's Day, I'm thinking about how to be a mother is held up as the example of not being selfish and instead being selfless, sacrificing for your children, doing for others. And I do want to preach today about the practice of thinking of others, because you can't think about the peace that the world needs without that. And to be a parent is to commit to thinking of others, but there's a bit of a trap here. The way that people talk about being a mother, and it is telling that we don't really talk about fathers this way, the way that people talk about being a mother, it's like she is the best mother who succeeds most fully in erasing herself. And that's not right or healthy for any of us. I think that trap there is a trap of believing that any of us can be a person, much less a parent, without other people, that we can be a person all on our own, that we don't need one another. We hold mothers to a standard of selflessness that we don't hold anyone else to. We certainly don't hold fathers to the same standard of selflessness. Julia Ward Howe was asked to make some remarks at the 1892 Parliament of Religions, and she focused on the question of what is religion. While she talks about religion being about the relationship to the divine, she makes a more radical statement. She said this, "I think nothing is religion which puts one individual absolutely above others. And surely nothing is religion which puts one sex above another. Religion is primarily our relations to the supreme, to God. And any religion which will sacrifice a certain set of human beings for the enjoyment or aggrandizement or advantage of another is no religion. It is a thing which may be allowed, but it is against true religion. Any religion which sacrifices women to the brutality of men is no religion." Julia Ward Howe doesn't pull any punches. I think we often have in our mind the idea that it is the job of the mother, especially, to sacrifice themselves for the advantage of another. The writer Anna Malaika Tubbs shares that she lived in many different countries during her childhood growing up, and that her mother judged all of these different places and communities where they lived by how well they treated mothers. "Everywhere we went," writes Anna, "my mom would comment on the ways mothers were treated. She often said, if a mother is treated well in her community, that community will do well. If the opposite were true, my mother believed that the community would suffer on all health and wellness indicators. She could find a way to relate everything back to the treatment of mothers." While she was making the rounds a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, to promote the book that she wrote about the mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin, She says that she heard from many moms who initially struggled with motherhood largely because they felt that their needs were no longer a priority or because it didn't seem like anyone cared about what they were going through. They gave birth and then were thrown into mothering as if it were a journey that one should be forced to embark on all alone. I didn't only hear this in regard to biological motherhood. Adoptive mothers, too, shared that their needs were treated as less significant after they became parents. Anna Malika Tubbs shares a story of right after she gave birth and was recovering from the birth and needed to get herself cleaned up, and so she wandered off into the bathroom that was nearby, everybody else in the room gathering around the baby that had just been born. And Anna, surprised at how much blood she was washing away, in pain from the stitches that had been sewn into her, she could have really used a hand there. And people were so focused on the child that she didn't feel like she could ask for any help. So she did it herself and got herself dressed by herself. The problem is that we think that only some people, the mother or people who get gendered as female, have to do the troublesome thinking about others thing. If the fundamental essence of motherhood is caring about the well-being of another, then we all need to be part of mothering. Take a look at the hymn book for a moment. There's a reading in there, number 596, that I'd like to just take a look at for a second. What you'll find there is a version of the Metta Sutta, the Metta meditation, a Buddhist practice that's often called the loving kindness meditation. In this version, it explicitly says that we need to take on the attitude of a mother. Let's read this together. Let us cultivate boundless goodwill. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none in anger or ill will wish another harm. Even as a mother watches over her child, so with boundless mind one should cherish all living beings, radiating friendliness over the whole world, above, below, and all around, without limit. Trying to balance these things, thinking about mother as this model of the behavior that we should engage in and the kind of pressure and strain that that puts on mothering and the way that we can kind of essentialize mothering. And I think we need to definitely guard against the one, but I also think we can't let go of the other, the learning from mothering. The mothering that's described in that version of that meditation is not something that somebody else is taking care of while others are free to do what they want to do. It's something that we're all expected to do. It's not just assigned to one gender or one set of people. It's a practice of care that we're all supposed to adopt if we are to thrive. I worry that we talk in essentializing ways about mothering. I worry that it is a way of encouraging the notion that it is simply natural to mother and that mothering is only natural to one gender. But when I hear the words of Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day proclamation, I can't help but be moved. With something like 34,000 dead in Gaza, of which nearly 14,000 are children, Julia Ward Howe's words feel addressed to today. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. This applies to the heinous attack by Hamas on October 7th, and it applies to the violence, the leveling of cities, the blocking of aid supplies, and the ruination of hospitals that has been the response of Netanyahu's Israel. It is shocking that for months now, lack of basic sanitation is a concern for people of Gaza. It feels like 19th century stuff. And it was exactly that kind of 19th century stuff that Mother's Day is rooted in. A woman named Anne Maria Reeves in 1858 started Mother's Day work clubs in various West Virginia towns to improve sanitary conditions for people and for families. She had lost several of her children to diseases and injuries that could have been prevented if simple sanitation practices were available to her. When the Civil War started, she turned these clubs to the project of providing aid to both the Confederate and the Union soldiers. While she was doing that, Julia Ward Howe and her husband served on the Sanitary Commission that was formed during the Civil War. Because the carnage of the war wasn't just on the battlefield. More men died in the Civil War from disease in prison of war camps and in their own army camps than died in battles. In 1870, Julia Ward Howe wrote what she called an appeal to womanhood in response to her Civil War experience of that carnage and loss of life, and also in response to the Franco-Prussian War that had broken out in Europe that year. She tried to establish a Mother's Day of Peace every year on June 2nd, and she hosted a few of those events in Boston, but it really didn't take off. She wasn't really successful in getting that adopted as a practice. It was the daughter of Anne Reeves, Anna Jarvis, who was able to get the Mother's Day holiday established in, I think it was 1914. Her emphasis was more on thanking and paying homage to mothers than it was on rallying mothers to advocate for peace, and so maybe that was easier to promote as a state holiday than a holiday that called the state to task. Julia Ward Howe's appeal to womanhood began with these words: "Again, in the sight of the Christian world, have the skill and power of two great nations exhausted themselves in mutual murder. Again, have the sacred questions of international justice been committed to the fatal mediation of military weapons. In this day of progress, in this century of light, the ambition of rulers has been allowed to barter the dear interests of domestic life for the bloody exchanges of the battlefield. Thus men have done. Thus men will do. But women need no longer be made a party to proceedings which fill the globe with grief and horror. Despite the assumptions of physical force, the mother has a sacred and commanding word to say to the sons who owe their life to her suffering. That word should now be heard and answered to as never before." And it feels like she's talking to right now. There is insight into compassion and pain and loss and love in the experience of mothers and mothering that we need to learn from. In Anna Malaika Tubbs's book, which is called The Three Mothers, she details the horrors of racial violence that made up the context in which Alberta King, Burtis Baldwin, and Louise Little grew up and then raised their children. Anna writes the book because while we tend to know the names Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin, we don't know Alberta, Burtice, or Louise, forgotten and erased. Martin and Malcolm and James didn't arrive on the earth fully formed to be leaders in the movement for civil rights and liberation. They became who they became because of the variety of caring and loving that they received from their mothers. Even just becoming aware of their existence, Alberta, Berdice, and Louise, we realize that mothers are holding and shaping the constant reimagining and evolution of our world, as Anna says. Alberta, Berdice, and Louise were very different from one another. There is no one way to mother. They had very different talents and dispositions, though all loved fiercely, despite all the obstacles against them. Louise was a confidant of Marcus Garvey and an activist. Alberta was a teacher, a musician, and a church leader. And Berdice single-parented 9 children. She wasn't an activist, maybe, Berdice, and she spent her life focusing on her children and her family and her children's friends and welcoming them and making sure that they felt loved. And that just feels revolutionary right there. And even in the midst of that, she had this love of language that she held on to. She never published any of her poems, but she wrote fabulous letters to all of her family. And that love of language she passed on to her son and promoted, encouraged in her son, even when her husband at the time was saying things like, it's improper for James to be taken to a play. Anna is writing her book specifically to and about Black women and mothers, but I think it does us good for the rest of us to listen in too, when she says each of the 3 of them, Alberta, Berdice, and Louise, teach us that wherever we come from, outside the United States, a big city or a small village, no matter where we live, the East Coast, the Midwest, or the South, and no matter our level of education or varying levels of access to resources, we have so much to offer. Each of us carries the potential to transform the world. These women did so through their own actions and through raising sons who became internationally recognized for their transformative power. They teach us that we possess inherent worth and we must recognize that worth in each other. We are likely very different from one another, but we can still offer each other affirmation and guidance. We must take pride in ourselves, in our children, and in our shared mission for each person to be granted the basic right to live life with dignity, happiness, and recognition. Let us remember mothers and mothering. Let us feel a call to recognition of the loss and pain and love and commitment that we can learn from mothering. The love and the pain, the both and situation in which mothering and nurturing and growing is rooted. Audre Lorde wrote this: raising Black children, female and male, in the mouth of a racist, sexist, suicidal dragon is perilous and chancy. If they cannot love and resist at the same time, they will probably not survive. And in order to survive, they must let go. This is what mothers teach. Love, survival. That is, self-definition and letting go. I think the student protesters on their campuses are trying their very hardest to love and resist at the same time. And what they're doing is messy and awkward, and they forget themselves, and they are calling themselves and all of us to remember we all deserve to thrive. Amen.